Tonight on the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation Weekly Update, Steve Kirsch is joined by the editors of the groundbreaking book, Turtles All the Way Down, Vaccine Science and Myth.
So basically, this book is breaking down the lies.
And actually,
like breaking down the lies one at a time.
And the reality is that most pediatricians and most physicians don't know that there's never been a true placebo-controlled trial.
They don't know that.
They don't.
They believe.
The rank and file don't know that. The people who design these clinical trials absolutely know what they're doing.
So that's Madhavasetti was saying that every doctor should read this. The book makes it very clear that theirs is not just deficient. It's deficient by design. It is intended to be a bad reporting system. And that comes up as an important thing because the clinical trials are also deficient by design.
This is about science, and it makes the point that there is no science without open debate. And what we don't have today is an open debate. And so this is a book that encourages debate.
Mary Holland is General Counsel for Children's Health Defense, and Zoe O'Toole is writer and editor-in-chief of the blog Thinking Moms Revolution. And now, here's your host, Louisa Clary.
Hi, this is Louisa Clary. Welcome to the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation Weekly Update. Tonight, we'll be talking with two special guests. Both are editors of the groundbreaking book, Turtles All the Way Down, Vaccine Science and Myth. Mary Holland and Zoe O'Toole. Mary has been in the role of General Counsel for the Children's Health Defense since 2019, also known as CHD, of course. And Zoe is a writer and editor who also serves as publisher liaison of CHD. Mary and Zoe will bring their special insights from the Turtles book and their long expertise in the health freedom movement for what promises to be a riveting discussion today. So we're excited you're here. VSRF is a 501c3 with a mission to end the COVID-19 vaccines, end the mandates, and be a data-driven resource for the public on vaccine safety and efficacy. We encourage questions and an open and transparent dialogue on any medical, scientific, or other information that's presented. Thank you all for joining us on both Zoom and Rumble Live. If you're joining us on Rumble Live and would like to ask a question of our guests, you can switch to Zoom and submit your questions by going to our website, vacsafety.org. That's vacsafety.org. Click the red register button. You'll immediately receive a link to this live Zoom webinar to your email and be able to log right on. Everyone asking questions, be sure to go to the bottom of your screen, click on the Q&A and write your question in there. I want to remind everyone that Angela on our VSRF team has over 23 years of experience as a registered nurse. We are so grateful she has recovered from a very severe COVID-19 vaccine injury, and she can help guide the injured with FLCCC's iRecover protocol and refer those experiencing adverse effects to a doctor. One of those treating spike injury is Dr. Pierre Corey, who can be booked at drpierrecorey, that's K-O-R-Y.com. And Nurse Angela can also connect patients with other doctors in every state, as well as connect the injured with groups that provide emotional support. So please reach out to her if you need to. Her email address is nurseangela@vacsafety.org. First, a few news notes for this week. Late last week, Phil Harper posted this. Hopefully it'll hit the screen here shortly. It says Pfizer and Moderna have a PR firm sitting on the CDC's Vaccine Advisory Committee. The people we believe are holding drug companies to account to ensure our drugs are safe are not doing their jobs. Drug regulation is broken. In an article by the Daily Mail, as you know, beggars can't be choosers by way of what publications choose to cover this movement. So we are very grateful. Here's Phil's tweet on the screen as well as the article. But basically, this New York PR firm, Weber Shandwick, has partnered with Pfizer for years and Moderna since this past June. And it's come out that the firm was also hired by the CDC to encourage Americans to get COVID-19 vaccines. No conflict of interest here, right? I know you all are just as shocked as I am by this, but as many of you know, we had Phil Harper on the VSRF Weekly Update a few months ago. He's working on a documentary to uncover all of the corruption during the pandemic. David is helping run our production tonight, but Lisa and Janet will be putting links in the chat on both Rumble and Zoom to this article for more, so be sure to check that out. Next up, this was honestly the hardest story for me to write tonight. Really makes my stomach churn. It's about the CDC's ACIP committee, which is the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. Their consideration yesterday and today of adding the COVID-19 vaccine to the childhood immunization schedule. This really snuck up on everyone, and signups to present at the meeting closed out on October 14th, prior to most any of us finding out this meeting was even on the books. It seems this popped up to everyone's surprise on Monday. The public comments began flooding the CDC site as word got out. So the reason I highlighted Toby Rogers' Substack is because it was very thorough, also gave a nod to several other Substacks written about this vote, including Steve Kirsch's Substack. And it was very much a one-stop shop for a few different ones that were written on the topic, and all conclusive. So before we go further, let's take a look at Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He was on Dr. Drew this week, and he was describing about who the CDC's ACIP committee members are and what motivates them. Let's play the video.
But here's one of the problems is that our regulatory agencies are funded by the pharmaceutical industry. So FDA gets almost 50% of its total budget from pharmaceutical companies. It gets 75% of its drug approval budget from pharmaceutical companies. So they're not working for you and me. They're working for those companies. CDC spends, has a budget of about $12 billion a year. About $5 billion of that go to purchasing vaccines and then distributing them. With CDC, you don't get promoted, you don't get recognized, you don't get applauded for finding problems with vaccines. You get your promotion from doing things that will encourage vaccine uptake and approval of new vaccines. And those are perverse incentives. And of course, they're going to end up with a problem because you no longer have a regulatory agency. The commercial features of that relationship are now the tail that wags the regulatory dog. So they have to get it on that childhood schedule. Now, why, you ask, the people who sit on that panel, which is a panel that's put together by the CDC. It's a panel called the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. The people who sit on that panel are not, for the most part, CDC or government employees. And so you think, and Dr. Fauci always describes them as independent doctors and scientists who have made this decision. But if you look at who these people really are, these are people who make their living on grants, developing drugs and vaccines for the pharmaceutical companies. And there is an unwritten rule. They trade places on these committees. They get millions and millions of dollars from pharma. There's a 2008 study showed 97% of them had undisclosed conflicts of interest. And a 2003 investigation by Congress showed that 80% of them were taking payments from the company whose products they were approving. And what happens is you sit on that committee, you work at a university doing clinical trials for pharmaceutical companies. And your phase two trial, phase three trial is ended. You then take your product back to ACIP and get it approved. So all the people who are on there, many of them in the future will have drugs that need approving. And so they just have this system where they rubber stamp everything for each other. And it says, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. It's a reciprocal altruism deal that they have. There are also studies that show the people, when they leave that panel, are showered with sinecures and with wealth and with grants and with junkets from the pharmaceutical company and from NIH. So they're all given rewards or rubber stamping anything that comes from that panel. So if it goes to that panel is incapable of saying no. It will say yes, no matter, even if they brought something in there and said, this is going to kill all these kids, it would still stamp it, go ahead, because they're all on the take.
Excellent. I see a lot of chat really dogging Dr. Drew. And I just want to say he is starting to wake up. He was very pro-vax last year. He is featuring Dr. Kelly Victory every week. He did have Dr. Pierre Corey on his show last year on early treatment. And this was when he was getting some high criticism on having a guest like Dr. Corey. So, you know, everyone's on a continuum, and most people who don't believe, as he's not quite there yet, right, won't even let you have the platform. So I am just grateful he had that platform and gave it to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because those words right there, that hit somebody. And he's got millions of followers on Twitter. And again, he's not there yet, but he's getting better. He's getting more exposed. And the fact that he's got Kelly Victory, Dr. Kelly Victory on there almost every single week tells you something. He's starting to open his eyes. So don't demonize him too much, because he's doing a lot more than most of the hosts out there in mainstream. And I'm going to kind of insert something here before I go farther. Dr. Pierre Corey wrote a tweet recently. He said he was highlighting Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s work in an interview that Children's Health Defense tweeted out. And he says this in his tweet: "I am ashamed at how I used to think about Bobby Kennedy Jr. based on outrageous media lies and propaganda hit pieces. I've gotten to know him and many of the deeply expert, committed people in CHD. I now believe history will find him to be one of the greatest American statesmen." I know that many of us over time have shifted our opinions. So give Dr. Drew a little bit of a chance. Just to recap this vote, this is not about kids getting one COVID-19 vaccine. This is about kids getting an annual shot every single year, which means 18 mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. This was Toby Rogers' major point in his Substack. We'll throw that in the chat. And once the CDC approves this, which was today, that vote came in today, the Academy of Pediatrics falls in line. Many of the states that go by the childhood vaccine immunization schedule, it looks like they could begin to highly recommend in certain school districts and states, mandating for schools, that kind of thing, as if it's, quote, highly encouraged by pediatricians, as if that wasn't bad enough. Always file for an exemption, depending, no matter what state you're in. But that vote did go through unanimously today, 15-0. What does this also mean? It means the licensed versions of the vaccines, Comirnaty and Spikevax, can finally be given to the public without any fear of liability for the manufacturers from death and injury that their products will cause. So we're going to go into the next story, which will explain this further. Yesterday, Dr. Kelly Victory went on the Dr. Drew Show and described the liability issue perfectly, educating special guest Dr. Vinay Prasad, who was unaware. He had no knowledge of the vaccine manufacturer liability issue that the ACIP's decision today affected. Keep in mind that Dr. Prasad is a well-known hematologist, oncologist, and professor in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the University of California, San Francisco. He has a big presence on social media, and although he is critical of proven early treatment protocols, he has been a vocal critic of many aspects of COVID policy, including vaccines for healthy young people. So we're going to watch another clip from yesterday on Dr. Drew.
Comirnaty is FDA approved. The issue is there is no Comirnaty available in the United States. When you go and get that vaccine, you are getting the vaccine that was approved only under the EUA. In a separate document, the FDA said there's no difference between the EUA available vaccine and Comirnaty. What they wanted to do was allow the vaccine manufacturers to use up their huge stockpiles of the non-FDA approved material. So I stand by my statement that there is no FDA approved.
Is it the same product, or you think it's different? Is it different in some way? What is it different?
Well, they're saying they are not pharmaceutically different, but they were not. Okay. They didn't allow Pfizer to go back and label the other ones as Comirnaty. We don't know. I don't know about you, but I haven't found Pfizer or Moderna to be particularly forthcoming with data. So I maintain there is no FDA-approved vaccine available for COVID in the United States. Now, if you go to Europe, you can comorbidity, great. But if you ask the guy at the Walgreens or the CVS or at your doctor's office, show me the vial, what you will get is EUA approved only. It is not comorbidity.
That's interesting.
The two things, they wanted to allow them to use up their stockpile. And remember, anybody who gets those and has an ill effect, an adverse effect, cannot sue. They're because they got an EUA product. If they had gotten Comirnaty, an FDA approved product, the vaccine manufacturer has liability.
My understanding is that they have no liability in both cases. They just have no liability. But you're saying they do have liability for a BLA approved vaccine?
Yes. Once the vaccine is, if the vaccine is FDA approved, but not yet on the childhood vaccine schedule, then there's liability. That's where the window of liability is. That's why in the United States, they are hell bent on making sure that the EUA doesn't expire before those vaccines get officially on the childhood immunization program, because otherwise there will be a window in which people could sue the vaccine manufacturers.
I love that he said, I'll have to dig in. The fact that he's willing to go on a show, not know some information, admit that he doesn't know it, and say, I'll have to dig in. And knowing Vinay, I'm sure he will. He is digging in daily. And he's one of those that's not quite there yet either. I say he's like halfway on all this stuff. But the fact that people are willing to discuss, openly debate, and be open to digging in, this is what we need right now across America. Many physicians is exactly what we need. So I'm encouraged by his openness to dig in. And I hope you will encourage him on socials and Twitter if you happen to follow him or comment on his work. Next up this week, a number of active duty officers in the U.S. military risked their careers by publicly demanding an end to the Department of Defense's unlawful COVID-19 vaccine mandate. In a press conference held Tuesday, the officers exposed coercive and retaliatory punishment that 80,000 unvaccinated service members continue to face. John Bose, first lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force, expressed the sentiments of many when he said, quote, I'm bringing awareness to this issue because it's my responsibility as an officer to support and defend our Constitution and the rights of others, end quote. And he continued, quote, this mandate is a dire threat to our national security, and I'm here to inform the American people and our elected leaders about the facts and consequences in order to save our military service members from harm. This group was joined by attorney Dale Saran, a former Marine officer who served from 1991 to 2018, and who is now litigating several cases in federal court against the military COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Saran and some of the officers recently discussed these issues on two special episodes of Brett Weinstein's Dark Horse podcast series called, quote, Support and Defend, Military Whistleblowers Confront a Rogue Chain of Command, Parts 1 and 2. We will put the links to those episodes in the chat, and we'll also link to the Breitbart article on the screen. The FLCCC this past weekend held their first educational conference in Orlando, Florida, specifically about the pathology and treatment of long COVID and vaccine injury. VSRF was a sponsor, and our own Steve Kirsch spoke on the epidemiology of the COVID-19 vaccine deaths and injuries. He knocked it out of the park, and more on that in a minute. But I was so grateful to have the opportunity to go with a few members of our VSRF team. I saw so many of your faces there that watch us every week. And it really just filled my heart to be there with like-minded folks who are just desperate to help those get the word out about these vaccines, about treatment, and about what's happening in public health. Thank you for walking up to me, introducing yourselves, opening yourselves up to myself and your families. We really can't do this without an army, and you showed up in full force this past weekend. Steve was one of the first few speakers. And in fact, one of the doctors in the crowd that attended, there was a video that the FLCCC posted to their socials. The doctor in this wasn't identified, but he said, quote, I've been attending medical conferences for 30 years, and this is the best one I've ever been to, and I've only seen 4 lectures. Lecture number 2 was Steve Kirsch. He went in deep and gave a presentation with 52 slides on vaccine injury and death. We will post it in the chat here coming up so that you can view and share with your friends and family. Steve was also interviewed with Jan from Epic Times for the American Thought Leaders series. So we await a date on that exciting release. Epic Times was also on site doing a documentary with NTD News, incorporating the vaccine injured, and they covered the conference. This Epic Times article recapped the weekend, probably the best that I saw, as you know, so much media coverage of this event, not. So we are so grateful for Epic Times. As we see on the screen, COVID-19 vaccine injury syndrome, not a disease. FLCCC conference shares how to treat it. If you'll keep that screenshot up for a minute as I continue, Dr. Paul Merrick stated, quote, patients will go to the doctor with all these complaints and the doctor will say, it's all in your head, end quote. And this, of course, is what we're up against. Bottom of the screen there, it says Dr. Pierre Corey listed 6 different treatment strategies for spike protein-induced diseases. These strategies are expressing spike protein, reducing inflammation, reducing microclotting, reducing mast cell activation, reducing viral persistence or activation, and recovery of the mitochondria. In his presentation, he gave very specific treatment guidance of exactly what he does to treat. If you know any physician looking to treat vaccine injury, this conference was bar none the one to see. They'll be coming out with a digital package, including all the materials and videos of the lectures for the weekend for $150 that physicians or the public can buy from the FLCCC website in the coming weeks. That's flccc.net. This conference, in addition to being a go-to for healthcare providers, was also in place just to show the depth and breadth of the enormity of the numbers affected by adverse effects of the COVID-19 vaccine that physicians have to convene to review, share best treatment practices to a public that is suffering in a huge, huge way. Dr. Ryan Cole presented the biopsies that showed spike protein presence and inflammation in blood vessels, muscles, heart muscles, brain tissue, lungs, spleen, and many more. We plan to work with him on a cells before and after video with the VSRF in the next few weeks. The FLCCC's epidemiologist, Dr. Flavio Cattagiani, came in from Brazil. His presentation also went deep. And in fact, he will be with us here on the VSRF update next week for an FLCCC conference recap. So be sure to join us. One person that I got to meet for the very first time at the conference was Martha, one of our VSRF volunteers, and I was thrilled. She's vaccine injured and recovering very well. She helps to run our clubhouse each week after the show, among countless other things, the line acts we put out. And I can't tell you the number of hours that she spends helping us get the word out. So, so nice to meet her in person. And another person I got to meet was whistleblower Brooke Jackson. And she was there along with her attorney, Werner Mendenhall. And if any of you followed Texas Lindsay when she was on Twitter, you remember how amazing she was setting up vaccine data from countries around the world. And she set it to music. It was featured by Epic Times and the Highwire. But of course, she was permanently banned and sent to Twitter heaven. But she is with us tonight for a few minutes, Lindsay Jones. Welcome. We're so happy to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm here from heaven, apparently.
Yes.
that was a bummer to lose my account, but there are multiple ways to get information out and connect with people. So I'm grateful for that. And I actually met Brooke Jackson via Twitter before I was kicked off and connected with her and wanted to find ways to help her get the word out about her case because it's so important. There's not a more important case that I'm aware of right now that's pending, waiting Absolutely. On the judge to decide. Right now, Pfizer has issued a motion to hopefully they want it dismissed, of course. And the FDA finally chimed in after they were supposed to be investigating it, but they never did. They said back in 2021 when she first initially filed, they were going to investigate and get back to her, and she was under seal, couldn't come forward about it. Mm-hmm. And finally, they just chimed in last week and said, oh, wait, we think we want to dismiss too. So they joined Team Pfizer instead of Team Brooke / public. But do you want me to fill everyone in on the story of Brooke Jackson's case that's not aware or?
Yeah, so I know if you've been watching VSR for a while, we had Brooke Jackson, of course, on and her attorney. And last week we played the Who is Brooke Jackson video. And that was also done by Lindsay. And I didn't know that until this weekend. So thank you for doing that for us. I know it played at the end of last week's webinar. So yes, just another minute on her case generally, just a quick overview just to catch people up that don't know about it.
Yep, I can do the Cliff Notes version. So Brooke was a regional clinical director at over three different trial sites here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And she noticed there was an egregious amount of fraud. And she had been doing clinical work for over 20 years and never seen anything so egregious in her life. She went to her upper management, warning them. They didn't do anything. Then she went to Pfizer at headquarters, and they didn't do anything. And then her next move was the FDA. And when she went to the FDA, she got a call from her boss letting her know that she had been fired. But one of the really interesting things that you mentioned earlier on this call was the Comirnaty vaccine being approved and how that was not available here in the U.S. But one thing I learned from Brooke when I was talking to her this past weekend about it is the Comirnaty vaccine was approved based on the Pfizer clinical trials. They didn't have a different vaccine for that. It's not a different formulation. It's the exact same vaccine. And it was used on the same data and studies and substances that the EUA was approved under. So it's the exact same thing with just a different label. There's nothing different about it. A lot of people might be shocked by that. I was taken back. I thought there was a separate trial going on for that one. But yeah, it's completely just a sticker on a bottle that makes it different. There's nothing else other than the liability that comes with that sticker. So that blew my mind. But one of the reasons that Pfizer didn't want to stop this trial when they realized that, okay, yes, there might've been fraud here, but if they had stopped, then Moderna would have gotten to the market first. Moderna was only 7 days behind them. Pfizer wanted to be number one. So if they had to start over on those sites, they wouldn't have had the 44,000 they needed to for clinical trial participants. So it's a really big deal. And why it's such a big deal is because today, with the children vaccine being added to the childhood immunization schedule, is that this is the one loophole. If they're able to go to trial and prove fraud, then it erases the contract that was put in place with the government to get these vaccines on the market, and can eventually pull them from all these steps and processes that they've gone through, because the original contract of safety and efficacy for Pfizer was based on fraud. So it's hope that people have, and right now it's in the hands of a judge in East Texas, and he is deciding, and supposed to decide by the end of the year, whether or not I'm moving forward. But Brooke really needs everybody's support, and you can go to her website. It's iambrookjackson.com and read about it. And latest case documents are on our website, and interviews and all of that. But any help she can get in getting that story out, I think it's going to be not just helpful for her, but helpful for everyone in our country that this has impacted. Because we were all lied to and frauded, and even the BMJ did an investigation on that and found that all of her claims were able to be verified from what she should witness during her job there. So
awesome. You articulated that so well and caught everyone up. So thank you so much. It was amazing to meet you. And Lindsay's going to be working with us here at VSRF on some things. So we're very excited to have you with us. And thanks for coming out tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'll talk soon. Also, I haven't forgotten, I see some chat going on, for Steve's presentation from the conference, our Steve Substack today we're featuring is What the Data Tells Us. The full 52 slides, check out the chat. You'll find all of them here. And David, if you want to throw up his What the Data Tells Us Substack slide, that'd be great. Steve was pumping out the Substacks at the conference. One other doctor he met was Dr. Michael Turner. I also met him. There's What the Data Tells Us. I also met him as he was a part of a VSRF video. We were filming interviewing doctors that will be an upcoming release from us. Dr. Turner was one of the early doctors that was treating in telehealth with the FLCCC early treatment protocols in 2020. If you remember, the FLCCC still has treating physicians of their protocols on their website. He was the very third provider listed in the busiest time of COVID. He's from Washington State, had many calling on him for service. He graduated Stanford, Harvard, and then trained at the Mayo Clinic. As far as the vaccine was concerned, this is another Steve Substack. We're going to be putting both in the chat. As the vaccine was concerned, he was waking up blue pill to red pill moments, which began at the Defeat the Mandates rally in DC. Steve Mett interviewed him and featured Dr. Turner's Substack in his own Substack this weekend, which recounted his entire story and turning point on the COVID-19 vaccine. We wanted to feature too, because I think his turning point, Dr. Turner's, it's always really interesting to focus on the people that used to think one thing and now think another, and why and how that transformation happened. Because as we know, the most important mission we have right now is to convince all the people that don't believe yet what we know to be true. So check that out, share it with your friends, your family, and anyone who might not believe quite yet. Now, I know with no further ado, I know this has been a long news segment, but we had so much to catch up on. I'd love to introduce our founder, Steve Kirsch. He's a Silicon Valley engineer, entrepreneur, who started the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund and CETF in 2020, studied repurposed drugs in the fight against COVID, finding huge success with the drug fluvoxamine. Then in 2021, after he saw signals that the COVID vaccines were harmful, Steve founded the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, or VSRF. Steve and our VSRF team continue to raise awareness about the lack of safety and efficacy of these vaccines and bring attention to the vaccine injured. Steve, great to see you and welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
And we have, hopefully, I'm hoping we have this screenshot. I'm not sure if we do. Do we have that billboard screenshot we're able to put up of the billboard?
No, we didn't get it in time. Apologies.
We didn't get it in time. Okay. We might try it at the end of the show, Steve. We'll prep it while you guys are interviewing so that you can talk a little bit about that. So let's go ahead and introduce our two special guests. Attorney Mary Holland is president and general counsel for the Children's Health Defense, CHD, and she's been involved in health freedom and vaccine choice movement for over two decades. Once she learned about the extreme liability protection that industry and healthcare providers enjoy and the suppression of accurate science and information about vaccine risk and injury, she understood the need for immediate, radical, systemic change. She's been devoted to that change ever since. Before joining CHD staff in the fall of 2019, Holland directed the graduate lawyering program at the NYU School for 15 years and lectured at Columbia Law School on international human rights advocacy. She's frequently testified in the state legislatures around the country and has co-authored two books on vaccines. Mary, welcome. We're so glad you're here. I am in the middle of one of your books about the HPV vaccine. So thank you for writing that, and all, it's so thorough, and I'm enjoying it. So thank you so much. Before we go farther, let's go ahead and introduce Zoe and also bring her on. Zoe O'Toole is a writer and editor currently working as the publisher liaison at Children's Health Defense. She served for many years as vice president communications, edited a series of 15 videos focusing on vaccine science for the website vaccinecourse.org, which has been delayed just due to COVID. And now let's go ahead and bring the topic at hand. Turtles All the Way Down, Vaccine Science and Myth Resolves the Mystery Around Vaccine Science in the U.S. Once and for All, citing more than 1,200 scientific resources, all from mainstream scientific papers and textbooks and the official publications of relevant government agencies or manufacturers' documents. The book is really intended for parents just overwhelmed by conflicting messages on this important topic, but it's also an excellent reference for medical researchers and professionals who seek better understanding of vaccine safety science. Whether you're new to the vaccine debate or a veteran seeking deeper grasp of the science, this book is a must read. We're putting it in the chat, so go get your copy on Amazon. It also serves as an excellent primer on vaccination to share with friends and relatives who may benefit from a deep dive on the subject. So welcome. And I just have to say, because it wasn't a part of our news, the book, The Real Anthony Fauci, is now a movie. And we encourage everyone to go check that out. It's incredible. I saw half of it. The only reason I stopped is I'm watching it with my children. I want them to know about this. We're going to play a little clip of the movie at the end. But you guys go ahead and dive into the book, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you. Great. So, hey, before we do that, I would love to get your comment on a reaction to the 15-0 vote today to put these COVID vaccines on the childhood vaccination schedule. So Mary, we'll start with you and then go over to Zoe.
Steve, it's despicable. There's no science behind this. In fact, all the science that we see suggests that this is absolutely unnecessary for children, and it's harmful. It's causing death and injuries. There's no justification for it in my mind. And certainly we at Children's Health Defense will be doing everything we can to turn this around. It's not yet on, as they pointed out yesterday in their meeting, it's the states that actually mandate shots or municipalities. It's not the federal government, but this is now the endorsement from the CDC. There was a vote yesterday for the vaccines for children to provide it for free to children who don't have insurance coverage or free Medicaid. So this is going to go forward in the states that either automatically put it on their schedule once it's CDC recommended, or that the health departments or the governors or the legislatures will put it on. So this is going to move forward. And for me, this is a very, very sad day.
Sorry.
I agree that it's very sad. And it's very hard for me not to get very down about it. But I do want to point out that there is one good thing about this. And the one good thing is that because so many people are aware of the COVID vaccine injuries and they're aware of the low level of risk to children, that watching this happen, watching this process, 15 to zero, these vaccines are getting recommended for children for whom they really shouldn't be, people are going to see more what the childhood vaccine recommendation process is like. If there's a whole lot more transparency into it because people are watching now. And that is a very good thing because most people have known nothing about it. They have trusted this committee, the ACIP committee, to make these decisions for their children. And as this book points out, that is a very, very poor thing to trust in.
Yes, totally agree. So I am equally appalled, but not surprised. Apparently, simple math skills to calculate a risk-benefit analysis are not required to be a member of the ACIP committee. I mean, they lack the basic math skills. It's like unbelievable in terms of the paper from Johnny Ioannidis at Stanford showed that 3 out of 1 million is the infection fatality rate, which means if your child got COVID, 3 out of 1 million will die. And it's likely less than that. We looked at the numbers in Massachusetts. Couldn't find a single death of a healthy child caused by COVID. So you have virtually no benefit. And 30%, almost 30% of kids that get this vaccine will develop some heart damage, some cardiac damage, according to the study that was done in Thailand, which nobody disputes. So I don't know how you can go from injuring 30% and saving less than 1 in 1 million. It's just unbelievable how they could do that. All right, let's, before we get into the questions, I've heard that none of the authors of Turtles is watching this live for security reasons. They don't want to reveal themselves, but presumably they may watch this on Rumble or what have you. And I would just like to do a personal shout out to them to say thank you. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for taking the time to write this just amazing, amazing book. It is almost like every sentence in this book is carefully crafted so that it cannot be attacked, so that there's not a single sentence in this book that can be attacked. And it was so cleverly done. And so it's down to earth. Anyone can read this book. I mean, I cannot say enough about this book. Everybody who's listening to this broadcast should get this book and read it. So I want to thank the authors. They put in at least, I've heard it's 5 years of their lives to do this. And there's more than one author. When you buy it on Amazon, this is the way they get compensated for their work. So I encourage people, even if you don't like Amazon for whatever reasons, to buy it on on Amazon. I think you could probably buy it on other platforms and maybe the authors make more money. Do you want to comment on that? Is there a better platform that, that people should buy it on than Amazon?
Currently, there isn't.
Okay.
It's also being sold on Jeremy Hammond's website, but I don't know that it makes much difference as far as the authors are concerned.
Okay, so let's go right into it. The first question that sort of pops into people's mind is turtles all the way down. Like, you know, for people who haven't read the book, okay, there is a very early on it explains the sort of the anecdote, but the expression turtles all the way down. When I hear that expression, the way I interpret it, especially in the context of the book, is that the book exposes the fact that they basically started with very poor shot, and we'll call it shoddy science, with the original vaccines, and then built the other vaccines on top of that shoddy science, and then built the next vaccine on top of that one, on top of that one, and on. So it's basically the title really should be shoddy science all the way down. Is that a proper interpretation, or did I get that wrong?
No, that is a proper interpretation. That
I like sort of the American phrase, I think, would be there's no there there.
Yeah.
They say that they're safe and there's no there there. There's no proof of safety all the way down.
Right.
To its core, it's corrupt.
Right. There's nothing there. And they, you know, they basically point out that there's never been a placebo controlled trial, that they deliberately test these vaccines against other vaccines as opposed to placebo, because that way they don't raise any safety signals. And to be even more dramatic, because Louisa mentioned the HPV vaccine. The HPV vaccine in this case would be Gardasil. The year was 2009 when Gardasil was introduced and approved. And what happened was that immediately these reports came in about the safety of Gardasil, and by it was 2 years later that the CDC finally did an investigation. I forget the name of the report. It's a famous report name, and they looked at the data and they found that Gardasil had generated three times as many adverse events reports as all of the vaccines in the VAERS system combined. So this isn't like with the COVID vaccines, it's greater than all the vaccines combined. With Gardasil, it was three times the number. And the CDC wrote a paper and said, there's nothing to see here, folks. It's perfectly normal. And then 2 years after that, 120 countries had approved the Gardasil vaccine. Now, did I get that right?
I'll be honest, I'd have to go back and check all the details, Steve, but until COVID came along, by far and away, the HPV vaccine was the most deadly and injurious to young people and to adults. And COVID has blown away even HPV. So it's a sad trajectory.
Yes, it actually makes HPV look like a safe vaccine.
It does. It's absurd. It's truly absurd. But actually, one of the interesting things, Steve, is that a lot of the injuries and the deaths that we're seeing from COVID are quite reminiscent of what we saw with HPV. We see the people losing their balance, the tremors, the paralysis, the facial paralysis, the cardiac deaths. A lot of those symptomology is actually pretty similar to COVID.
Yes, and the book points out that they wrote it off. And they said that the reason there's so many adverse event reports is because there was so much press about the adverse event reports that people were more likely to report them. And it's simply over-reporting. And that was the reason for all of the VAERS reports.
And there is
no evidence at all for that.
And the parallels, again, are very similar, Steve. At the very beginning of when these injuries were coming out, it was literally a front page story of the New York Times. Elizabeth Rosenthal, now with Kaiser, wrote about the Gardasil injuries. But over time, that got completely suppressed on social media and in mainstream media, much like with COVID. So in many ways, I see the HPV vaccine rollout and the clinical trials as the foreshadowing of everything we've seen with COVID.
Yes. And so when you, I look to the HPV vaccine as, okay, so what happened there? When did people find out that HPV was actually unsafe? And the answer is they never have, right? So it's now basically 10 years later, and it's still on the market, and doctors still think it's safe, and kids are still getting it, right?
But Steve, really great news on that. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has joined with other law firms, and there is going to be a multi-district litigation in federal court in North. So it's going to trial. So this is not forever without people understanding the genuine safety insanity with the HPV vaccines. Very similar. There's essentially no benefit. There's a lot of downside risks in every which way. It's going to trial in North Carolina in 2023.
Yeah. Basically 10 years later.
More than 10 years later. No, and thousands of deaths later, and thousands of people injured in the most serious way. Don't get me wrong. This is a tragedy. This is outrageous. I co-authored a book about it. It's absolutely outrageous what the drug industry is able to get away with. This is greed just beyond human imagining, that it's somehow okay to kill and injure children for money. It's just unfathomable.
Yep. So let's talk about the authors, because one thing you can't get from reading the book, reading all the forewords and so forth, is any insights into the authors. The authors have remained anonymous. They explain why the authors remain anonymous, and I'll get to that in a second. But can you tell us how many, or approximately how many authors there were of this book? And can you tell us the qualifications of the authors? Were they doctors? Were they scientists? Like, is there any insight at all that you can give us on those doctors? And if not, tell us why not. Or sorry, those doctors. I presupposed. So I don't know who any of the, I've never talked to any of the people who wrote it. I don't know if they're doctors or scientists. You know, clearly they know their stuff. And I've heard some rumors about who they are, but I'll let you answer that question.
We really don't know who they are, and we don't know how many there are. It's that well kept a secret. We interact with one who speaks English quite well, and he speaks for the rest of them. But we do not know his qualifications. We do not know his real name. We do not know what he does for a profession. But as you said, clearly, the authors know their stuff. They know science down.
Backwards, forwards, and sideways. Yep. I was very impressed. They actually, in some places, they make me look like an amateur. So, right. I was super impressed with this book. So what would happen to them in Israel if it became known who wrote this book?
I think it's hard to know, because people know that Israel was one of the first countries to jump on the COVID-19 vaccine bandwagon. They had most of the country vaccinated like that. That means that somebody who is very invested in the vaccine paradigm is very powerful in public health in Israel. So when that happens, there's a good chance that reprisals are very possible. One thing we know is that pretty much any scientist who actually comes out on the record and says, I think vaccines are doing this, gets their career destroyed. It happened to Christopher Exley just a couple of years ago when he said that he just thought at that point that aluminum in vaccines was a factor in autism. Career over. World expert on aluminum. Well, Rudy Schoenfeld, world expert on vaccines. He prints a review of this book, and suddenly, I'm a world expert on autoimmunity. He is the premier person who wrote the book, is literally on autoimmunity. immediately Science Magazine did a hit piece on him when he put a review of this book in his journal.
Yeah, it's like when I wrote about the vaccines being unsafe starting on May 25th on Trial Site News. It was May 25th of last year. Shortly thereafter, my Wikipedia page got changed, and then MIT wrote a hit piece on me calling me a misinformation super spreader, which in some ways I'm grateful for, because now when you do a search for misinformation super spreader, I am the top hit in Google.
Congratulations,
Steve. Yeah, so it's kind of a, you know, feather in my cap, claim to fame.
Hey, you might be beating out Bobby these days.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm definitely beating out Bobby. My competition is Joe Mercola. He sometimes gets in, but only when the New York Times actually ran a hit piece on him. And so sometimes that New York Times hit piece then will be outrank my MIT hit piece. So, you know, it's like competing hit pieces. I got to have to work harder to get another hit piece.
So there are a lot of scientists who can't survive that kind of a hit piece.
Right. Yeah. Fortunately, I'm not a doctor. So that's an inherent advantage that I have. Okay. So let's talk about remaining anonymous. And there were two reasons, and the book talked about the two reasons that they wanted to remain anonymous. And the first one we just talked about, which is they don't want to have their careers destroyed because they have to make a living like everybody else. The second reason is more interesting. And I'll let you describe it. You know, it's about they don't want to be a person ad hominem attacks, basically. So if you want to go into that.
I just
let the cat out of the bag, basically.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the main thing is that when you have an argument that is unassailable, what is the only thing you can do? Attack the messenger. So that was guaranteed with this book, that the messengers would be attacked. So if you don't have a messenger to attack, then you have to keep the focus on the arguments, which is exactly what the authors wanted. They wanted the focus on the arguments. They wanted people to talk about the science. They wanted people to talk about the arguments. They wanted to bring them to their doctors, to their relatives, and show them these arguments and say, listen, shoot holes in it all you want. Let's get down and talk about this.
And I have not been able to get any doctor to read this book. And I even tried giving, I have an electronic copy, which I gave for free to one of my friends who is he's pro-nuclear, right? So he clearly doesn't believe the narrative that nuclear is bad, right? He's willing to look at the science to see what reality is. And so I thought, oh, you know, this guy, totally science-based, he'd be thrilled to read something like this. So I said, hey, would you do me a favor? Just take 20 minutes and just read 20 minutes into the book. And he calls me up like 3 minutes later saying, this is an anti-vaccine book and he's not going to have any part of it. Vaccines are safe.
Wow.
That is... Well, you know, you can bring a horse to the water, but you have to get them to read the book somehow. Maybe it's $100. Maybe what you do for people on this call is you bet people $100 that they can't read the whole book. And
I like that.
And then if they do, if they say, okay, you know, I want my $100, then you start asking them questions just to verify that they read the book. And hey, you know, if they did, they're going to be red pilled after this, and it cost you $100, but I think that's worth it.
I like that bet. But one of the things it says in the very first chapter, it says, if you're not ready to read this book and have it really open the universe for you, then put it down and come back when you're ready. Because in point of fact, that person wasn't ready yet. But if the person has that book, at some point with this COVID narrative, that person may go back and then read this book. We have to find people when they're ready, and people are ready at different points.
Yeah, that's one thing Mary and I have learned over the last couple of decades, is that you can have a person adamantly opposed to hearing any of it 1 year, and the next year they're what was it you said about?
Something happened in their life. You know, it's like Dr. Asim Malhotra. If we had approached Dr. Malhotra before his dad died, he'd have written us all off. His dad died and he said, there's something, wait a minute. There's something wrong here.
Of course, this is what we want to prevent. We want to prevent people from having to lose a family member in order to understand this stuff.
Yeah, but sometimes people lose a family member, like Sean Kasten lost his daughter, and he refuses to recognize that the vaccine may have been, the vaccine.
In public, we don't know. It's hard to imagine that people who've lost a teenager aren't really thinking about it. This is it is a minefield, and it is a huge change in one's perspective in the world. If you've been a big promoter of this whole paradigm,
So before I'm going to get into the content of my next question, but one other question, which is, I thought I remembered reading somewhere, and I don't remember whether it was an Amazon review or it was in the book, about a reward that if you find an error in the book, there was someone offering $1,000 for any error, and there were no takers of the $1,000. Nobody has found an error so far. I'm sure I'm not making that up, because that $1,000 stuck with me because it was so low. I thought it should be $10,000 or $100,000. But it was clearly $1,000. I'm not sure where I read that. Have you heard that? Is that?
It wasn't exactly $1,000 because it was a Hebrew challenge. One of the PhD who read the book said, "This is shocking. Can anyone refute it?" And he put a challenge online and said that he would make a donation to the hospital of your choice if you can prove the first chapter is wrong.
Ah, okay. And did anyone get the $1,000?
Nope.
Wow.
No one came close.
And the first chapter is a killer chapter.
Yep. All you have to do is read the first chapter and you know.
Right. Right, you're done. You're pretty much done after the first chapter. So, folks, you don't have to read the whole
book. Read the first chapter.
Just read the first chapter. And, you know, it's still even the last chapter is so interesting, you know, and all the chapters in between are interesting. Chapter 3 is on the Vera system, my favorite chapter. But the whole book is awesome. So speaking of favorite chapters, Mary, what is your favorite chapter of the book? And Zoe, what's your favorite chapter and why?
My favorite chapter by far is chapter 11, the author starts with the reader in a very gentle way. We want you to look at this debate. We want you to see what the mainstream narrative is. We want you to see what the parents have been arguing. But by the last chapter, they're ready to be very hard hitting, and it's called The Vaccine Hoax. And it's so powerful. I often get tears in my eyes when I read the last chapter, because it really does describe that what's happening is a crime. And this is a life and death issue for all of us. And there's really nothing more important. They're not gonna stop, because the crime is so enormous that these individuals really, they can't afford to stop. They will stop at nothing until they are stopped. And I think that's really true, because there's no there. There's no defense for these people. They know what they're doing. They're killing children around the world. And it's indefensible to anyone with a shred of humanity. What is happening through this program is indefensible. So to me, chapter 11 really is incredibly powerful.
Zoe? Your favorite?
My favorite chapter, I'm such a geek. My favorite chapter is the chapter where they go through 5 different studies in detail and tell you exactly how they were marketed and exactly what the authors were saying in the mainstream media and what we are told they said, which of course they never did say. And then go through the methodological flaws of each of them. And that's just fun. Because I've been reading these things for a decade and been furious. And so it's great for me to just watch somebody take them down.
Okay. So this book, my understanding is it was written over a period of 5 years. And it was written in Hebrew originally. And then somehow you guys got a copy of it and said, hey, maybe we should translate this into English. So maybe you can talk to us about that story of how you guys like stumbled onto this book that had been, and how long had it been circulating in Hebrew in Israel before you guys stumbled on it? And how did you kind of stumble on it? Were you like, you know, walking down the street and somebody, you know, hands you a copy of this book in Hebrew and says, you know, like, what was the story? Well, how was the connection made where this book went from obscure in Hebrew to then translated? And it will it be translated into other languages?
We hope so.
Well, I'm going to respond on that. It's already being translated into French right now as we speak, and I think it will be translated into other languages. It deserves that. So I was invited as a speaker to talk about the HPV vaccine book in 2019, and I went to a conference in Tel Aviv, and it was 1,000 people. So what's happened in Israel has been particularly shocking to me because there clearly was a very strong vaccine safety movement. And at this conference, people talked about this book that had just come out, This Turtles All the Way Down. And in fact, I met one of the authors of the book review, Nati Ronel, in the Harufa Scientific Journal. So I heard a little bit about this book, but unfortunately, I don't read Hebrew. But on the back of this paperback, this blue paperback, there was a QR code. And I'm not very technologically sophisticated, but I was like, I want to check out like the QR code here. And I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, here's 1200 references. And these are primarily in English. And this is to the CDC and the FDA and the NIH and New England Journal and JAMA and British Medical Journal. And I was like, this is a really serious book. This is really, I want to know what this book says. And so I had gotten to know these Israeli organizers of the conference and I called them up and I was like, who are these people? And they said, well, we can't tell you who these people are, but we'll set up this, you know, darkened video conference and you'll call this person by whatever. And so they set me up with this person and I said, I want to read the first chapter. You got to give me the chapter in English. And I said, why don't we get this translated for you? And they really were quite unwilling to hand this over to anybody because it is technical and it's an important book. So they laboriously did the first version in English themselves. And then I started editing it and I really couldn't finish doing that process. And I reached out to Zoe, a colleague of many years, and Zoe took it to the finish line. And I'm so grateful that this book is now available in English.
Thank you. Thank you, both of you.
It's clear. Yeah, it's a great book. That. It really is a great book.
Awesome. Okay. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why this book is different than any other vaccine book on the market. I mean, to me, it's because it's so readable and it is so well referenced. That to me sets this book apart from anything else that's out there, because stuff that's out there would be either too technical for people to read and understand, or just too sort of, you know, for laymen and with not enough oomph to it. This combines the oomph, the scientific oomph, and all the references. It's hard hitting, but it's also very easy for someone who's a layman, someone who's not a specialist to read and understand. Did I capture the essence of why this book is so special?
Yes, you did. That's exactly what it's intended to do. It's intended to make the case scientifically in such a way that anyone who is new to the subject can grasp it. And I'm thrilled that we succeeded.
And I credit Zoe. It is extremely well edited. It's well written, but it's also well edited in English. It really is highly readable. You don't have to be an expert. And it gives you questions to ask the doctors, and it gives you every major question, whether it's adverse event reporting or epidemiology or the studies that will never be done or the disappearance of disease. It covers all the major topics that have been in play for the 20 years that Zoe and I have been in this battle. It covers it all in a very accessible yet very rigorous way.
Yeah,
Yeah. I mean, it's just totally, totally brilliant. You know, I read some of the, at the front of the book, it has the people, quotes from people saying what a great book it is. Meryl Nass is quoted. I noticed that Bill Gates's name wasn't on the list there.
Love to hear him read it.
Send him a copy, Zoe. We should definitely send that over to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation our compliments.
Great to have an autographed copy from the authors to send to Bill's. Bill, hey, thank you for your work on vaccines and making our book possible.
Thought you'd be interested.
Yeah, and if he wanted to, hey, Bill, would you like to say, you know, for the next printing, maybe we could include a quote from you. Wouldn't that be something? Or have you heard from anyone from the CDC, FDA, or WHO about their feelings about this book?
No one.
It's just crickets, huh? It's similar to when Bobby does a debate challenge, which he's been doing for the last 20 years. Nobody seems to want to debate him on the book. Guys don't want to comment on it. They would prefer that this book.
Yeah, they don't want anybody to know about it, I think.
Right. No, they want it to just disappear. Right. It's just like Bobby's book. Right. Yeah. It's like, you know, nobody's good at this, but you know, it was Dr. Schoenfeld did include a book review in the main medical journal of Israel, and it did make big waves. So there may be waves ahead for this book now that it's in English. I think that's likely.
Awesome. So before we get to audience questions, I want to ask you if there's anything that you would like to say or cover. To be sure you get it in before, you know, time ends and people start dropping off. What are the, do you have maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that you want to make sure that everybody knows about this book or what's in it?
Well, I'll just mention, Zoe can sort of go through the 5, but one of the things I love about this book is it makes this point that there are these studies that will never be done. If they could be done, they would be done. If they could come out and say, you know, the vax versus unvax study shows that vaccinated children are 1,000 times healthier, do we really think they wouldn't have come out with that study? If they really had winning arguments, do we really think they wouldn't be debating us? If people were really healthier, if they got these shots, do we really think they wouldn't have studies that showed their overall health is better? Of course they would. And so the reason that they have to suppress us, the reason that they have to censor us, is because they don't have the science. They don't have the arguments. And so I think the book makes these points really, really well. But Zoe, what do you think are sort of the key things people need to know?
That's a really good question. We did cover some of the things that are really important about the book. I think maybe some of the myths that people still believe that vaccines saved us from the scourge of infectious disease. And the book goes through the rigorous history of infectious disease and the drop and decline in mortality from infectious disease. And you find that 90% of it happened before any vaccines really even came along, much less were widely distributed. And so the narrative that we get is just wrong. So why are we hearing the wrong narrative? The historians know that the main reason why infectious disease went away is because we have good sanitation and we have clean water and horses are not dropping excrement in the streets anymore. And all of these things that made a huge difference. Historians know this, and scientists even know this now. It's an open thing. It's not controversial. Why do we still have the impression that it was all due to vaccines?
I want to add to that one of the other myths that the book takes on in a very original, very deep way is the myth of the success of polio. When we hear about the vaccine programs, they're always talking about the success of smallpox and the success of polio. So this book absolutely lays that to waste. It just makes it absolutely crystal clear that the official narrative that the polio vaccine
vaccine save the world is absolute garbage, and that it goes through 19 different points showing that that is absolutely a false narrative. And it was likely pesticides. It was likely DDT. It was likely lead arsenate, in perhaps in as a cofactor with other things, but it was not the polio virus alone. And the vaccine itself was not the savior of the day.
Right. And that was the second to the last chapter. I enjoyed that chapter. Fluoride has something in common to this as well. You know, the story of fluoride, people thought, oh, look, the tooth decay went down after we fluoridated the water. The problem is they didn't fluoridate the water in Europe, and tooth decay went down even more where we didn't. But you see, nobody looks at the comparison group. They just say, hey, we rolled out fluoride and tooth decay went down, so it must be working. And we don't measure IQ points because, of course, who would think that ingesting fluoride would lower your IQ, even though it does. And at this FLCCC conference, I met Paul Thomas in person. Paul Thomas, of course, is one of the physicians. He's like a mini Andrew Wakefield. Paul Thomas wrote these essential studies showing that, and there are some very nice curves showing that the more times you vaccinate the kids, the more health visits that they have. And, you know, they had to go and basically cause Paul Thomas just like they attacked Andrew Wakefield, they attacked Paul Thomas the same way. So thank you for highlighting those key points. So Louisa, do you want to take it away here with some audience questions?
Questions, yes. Excellent. We have several, so I'm looking down at these. Let's see. I am confused because the Facebook page where people post all the folks they know who are hurt or dead via the mRNA vaccines is convincing that all vaccinated people will eventually suffer. On the other hand, most of the people I know are vaccinated and looking to take the next booster. Why are there so many vaccinated people unharmed? And this is who someone knows, right? It's their personal who they
know. We didn't cover the COVID-19 vaccines, but I can say that everybody responds to things individually. Everybody has a different physical response to any drug. So even tobacco, there are so many studies that show that yes, tobacco causes cancer, but how many people have smoked 2 packs a day and never got lung cancer? So there are smokers who are healthy, just as there are people who have gotten exposed to almost any drug that are healthy, but because their tolerance is higher than the tolerance of the people who have gotten injured. Though I also, I was reading something Robert Malone said about the hot batches or the bad batches. And apparently the level of injury varied dramatically from batch to batch in the COVID-19 vaccines.
Mm-hmm. So depending on where you are, you'll see nothing. The other thing may be that people are reluctant to bring up the topic, that if they are injured, that they don't want to reveal it. And so that is a possibility as well. Depending on their injury, they may be able to hide it very well. They don't want anyone to know that they have a disability. That could be part of it as well. So for example, my carpet cleaner, he is in pain. He told me he's in pain like 24 hours. Whenever he's awake, he's in excruciating pain, but you would not know it by looking at him. And I found out his wife had suffered some severe side effects from the vaccine only because I asked him. And so I suspect a lot of people are basically not reaching out and saying, hey, were you vaccine injured? Or, you know, was your spouse vaccine injured and so forth? So they may not be realizing that the vaccine injury is as widespread as it is. And the other thing that that's going on here is that vaccine injuries are quite broad in terms of you may lose feeling here, or maybe have numbness, may you have vision problems and all this. And your doctor is going to tell you, No. Wasn't the vaccine. The vaccines are safe and effective. You actually just got unlucky. And you see, these people are basically being gaslit by their doctors to say, oh, can't walk today, had to crawl to the bathroom. That wasn't the vaccine. It was something else. So these people aren't going to go and blame the vaccine because their doctor says the vaccines are safe and effective.
Yeah, so, that's true. So a friend of mine, a lot of that.
I think that may be the explanation for that.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, when you look at the stats from Wayne Root, for example, he had 100 people. Basically, he had probably around 50-50 vaccinated versus unvaccinated at his wedding. And he tracked what happened to those people who attended his wedding over 8 months. So it's a prospective trial to observe what had happened. And what he found was that 27 people in the 100 people who were vaccinated were injured, and eight basically died. And in the other group, it was zero injured and zero died. And so here, when you're paying attention to these things, you start to hear things and I'll bet the people who were injured basically didn't ascribe it to the vaccine, right? Oh, I got tongue cancer. They had to cut out half my tongue. What an unlucky thing. But I'm sure they didn't ascribe it to being the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next question.
Yes. So when I went on, we did address the authors, but just for people that are a little confused, this person, Jody says, when I went on Amazon to buy the Turtles book, it appeared there were two different authors. I got confused. Is Mary Holland the author? Of course, we kind of went through this, but if you guys will just clarify for one more time about the anonymous author and your roles.
Right. So Zoe and I are co-editors of the book, but we're not the authors. We just sort of discovered the book, if you will, and wanted it translated into English. And we worked on editing the English translation, but we're not the authors. The authors are anonymous because they want the arguments to stand on their own, and they don't want to deal with what would inevitably be very harsh blowback to people who, if they are in the scientific world, which we presume that they're very well educated in science, although we don't know exactly what they do.
Yes.
There was also a fraudulent version of the book on Amazon briefly that had our cover and the text from John Green's novel, Turtles All the Way Down, inside the book with an author's name. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right?
Wow.
But yes, it was taken down. And so hopefully nobody will be buying that one anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So don't confuse it with the John Green novel with the same name. That was a mistake I made because people were talking on my Substack about, hey, have you read Turtles? Have you read Turtles All the Way Down? I'm like, no, I never heard of it. I'm Googling and I'm getting the John Green novel. I'm saying, thinking like, man, what is in this thing? I'm like trying to I'm going to Wikipedia. I'm looking at the storyline. I'm thinking like, what are people so excited about this novel? And so it wasn't until later that I realized that it's Turtles All the Way Down, Vaccine Science and Myth.
Yeah, you need the subtitle.
You want to hold the book up, Steve, one more time?
You need the subtitle. Make sure you get the right book. And also just one other thing. We talked about side effects. You know, one of the biggest side effects, of course, is death from these vaccines. And when people die, people are thinking like, oh, this guy died 5 months after he got the shot, so it couldn't be the shot. Again, your friends would think the shots are perfectly safe because this guy died from a heart attack. He didn't die from the vaccine. Look, if somebody dies from a cardiac condition after they got the shot for a year, after they got the shot within a year timeframe, it's almost certainly the shot. And you should assume it's the shot unless it's proven otherwise. And this is from Peter McCullough. And this is from Dr. Asim Malhotra. This is what you should be assuming here. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you. Okay, here we go. Next one. Let's see. Sorry, trying to get through these. How can we fight if the mRNA shots are mandated in schools and sports? How can we fight this?
Well, I think there are a lot of different ways, Louisa. I think one sort of the first issue is self-protection, right? So you may have to pull your kids out of school and homeschool them. You may have to move to to another state which doesn't mandate it. Right now, there's no state that has it on the schedule, but I think we can assume that there will be states that will put it on for the fall, barring the unforeseen. And we can also, there's no science there, Louisa. So there are all kinds of challenges that are being brought. We have a challenge against the FDA for the authorization, let alone this recommendation. We will definitely be looking at challenges. There are families right now in New York that I've been in touch with, New York City, who are challenged. Well, actually, New York City dropped its requirement for student athletics to have the mRNA shot. Remember, in August, the CDC came out with guidance saying, because the shots don't stop transmission, there is not really a basis for discrimination against the unvaccinated. It is not the guidance of the CDC at this point to, well, it's not their guidance from August in general to be discriminating between people who are vaxxed and unvaxxed. So again, this recommendation clearly isn't even consistent with the CDC's own guidance. Yeah. So there's basis to really push back, and we all need to be pushing back in every conceivable way and reaching out to our legislators and saying, what are you doing about this? Let's not forget, we do have elections coming up in, you know, November 8th, and it is very important that we use those elections to send a signal that what is happening is intolerable.
Yes, thank you. And children, go ahead, Zoe, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's also very important as a parent to know your state's exemption policy. Mm-hmm. Know whether your state has philosophical exemptions or religious exemptions, or all states have medical exemptions, but learn what's applicable to your state and what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And as I know you both know, but I see childrenshealthdefense.org. The website is a huge resource. So if you are looking to fight it in your state, definitely look to that site, because anytime there's campaigns going on, there's links to local legislators and state legislators to get the word out and get your voice heard. So definitely tune into their website. This one's from Lisa. Can you talk about what it means that they used bioactive placebos in all the kids' vaccine trials?
It means they know they're not safe. Hmm. That's what it comes down to.
But what is a bioactive placebo? I mean, I understand what placebo is, but is that...
So a placebo is supposed to be biologically inert.
Okay.
And saline, if you injected it into the body, would be biologically inert. It doesn't do anything.
Okay.
But what the vaccine trials use are substances that are not biologically inert. So you cannot say the vaccine did all of these things, because the so-called placebo also did those things, especially in the case of, like was the case for a lot of the HPV trials, they used a substance that had aluminum in it. Mm-hmm. And aluminum is highly immunogenic. So mm-hmm. it's going to do a lot of the same things that the vaccine does to the body. And we saw that autoimmune conditions like crazy in the control group.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Thank you so much. Do any of the vaccines have a real package insert yet? Without the package insert, it's not an approved drug or vaccine. This is from Dan.
Well, all of the vaccines on the childhood that are recommended that have received, that have been approved by the CDC, approved by the FDA and recommended by the CDC, they do have a product insert. And you can find that on the internet for each one of the childhood vaccines. And the product inserts are only given to the physicians. They're not generally given to the patients, the children who are the parents of the children who are getting vaccinated. But the product inserts are very revealing. They actually do talk a little bit about the clinical trials, and you can sort of see what the deficiencies are. And they talk about what are the side effects that have been reported to the pharmaceutical industry, to the producer of the shots. So you're going to get slightly more honest information in the product insert than you're going to get anyplace else, is my view. But Zoe, I don't know what your view is.
No, that's true. I think what they might have been asking, though, was specifically about the COVID-19 vaccines, because they just got recommended mm-hmm. for children. So I assume they exist. The question is whether or not they actually have been distributed as yet, but I have not seen one yet.
Okay, thank you. All right, so this is the last question, but I know this is near and dear to everyone's heart. I know we talk about humans and focus on humans, but we have a lot of pet lovers in the audience and are asking, can these vaccine myths be applied to pets as well?
Pets are way over vaccinated. Some vets vaccinate dogs and cats every year. And I don't know how you people have, but my friends all have had pets with crazy weird cancers that cut short their lives. And so, yeah, the myths are there too. Yeah. Their vaccines are actually better than our children's ones, though, because they're not allowed to put in thimerosal, I believe. And I believe there are also aluminum-free versions of all of them.
Wow.
Yeah, so there is a book. It was written in, I think, 1995. And I linked to it in the episode, the description of the episode, this VSRF episode on my Substack. I have added a link to this book, and there is a chapter in that book about vaccinating your pet. So take a look at that. It's a really good book. It was written a long time ago, but everything in that book still applies. So look for the VSRF call, and it should be in there.
Okay.
One thing that I've heard is that generationally the damage gets worse. Mm. So because pets have shorter lives in general, mm-hmm. we see bigger damage in the generations. So if you've got a third generation that or a fourth generation where the parent was vaccinated, the grandparent was vaccinated, the great grandparent was vaccinated, you see the neurological effects in the new generation, mm-hmm. even more than you'll see them in the humans.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. So I just checked it. It is there. That link is there. It's called The Vaccination Connection. So if you search it, if you can't find it, and chapter 10, vaccines for animals, it's only 2 pages. So it should be a short read.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks so much. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's a true honor to meet you and to be with you. I know Steve has been super looking forward to this book. He talked about it a lot at the FLCCC conference and has spread the word far and wide for weeks on this VSRF weekly update. So, and did a Substack on it well before doing the VSRF update tonight. So thank you. We wish you well. And I know there is a Children's Health Defense Conference. It is sold out right now. It is coming up this weekend, Monday, Tuesday in Knoxville, Tennessee. Mary Holland is a featured speaker on Monday. And of course, the premiere of the real Anthony Fauci movie is that night. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will be attending. So what a great conference. I hope it goes really well for you all. And thank you so much.
And that will be the entire movie, by the way, right?
I think it's part one, actually. It's just not finished yet. It's just
part one. Oh, okay.
Yeah, part one.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you can see part, everybody should know, you can see part one for free right now. My Substack has details where you can do that. And it's only going to be for the next like 7 days or so you can do that. So take advantage.
It's really good too.
It is a really good movie.
It is.
And Bobby did a fantastic job in that movie. You'll be so impressed.
Mm-hmm. We'll put that link in the chat and we'll put it at the end of the show as well. Did you have something else to say, Mary?
No, I was just going to thank you, Louisa, and thank you, Steve. We really appreciate the opportunity to come.
We really do.
Oh, no, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you guys for being here. And thank you for all the work that you put into to create this amazing book. It is unbelievable. And the world is grateful for what the two of you have done, and also to all of the authors of this book. You know, we cannot thank you enough for producing this book. It is amazing. You know, when people deplatform me and say, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, I just hand them the book and say, oh, so hey, you know, they're offering $1,000 for any mistake. Can you find one?
That's awesome. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Have a great night. And
good night.
We don't go yet, everybody else in the audience. We encourage our viewers to go into Clubhouse to continue the conversation afterwards. VSRF volunteer team has been live streaming this webinar. Clubhouse app works best on your phone, not your computer. So if you'll load the app, then use the link in the chat to go directly to the COVID Special Event Center. But still hang on with us because we have a couple more items to discuss here before we go. Donations. In order to continue the work of ending the COVID-19 vaccine program, fighting to stop big tech censorship, and bring back scientific debate, we need your help and financial support. So we're a 501c3 nonprofit. Lisa and Janet are putting a link to our donation page on our website in the chat. And we really thank you in advance for anything that you can offer us. Please spread the word. We appreciate it. We also have our new shop, a Defeat the Mandates shop, the website. Our lawn signs are available for $19.99 plus shipping. This is for the election, of course. Vaccinated, unvaccinated, Democrat, Republican, you can stand up against the mandates and throw a sign in your yard and support. So we've got more merchandise coming soon. So if you will stay tuned to that website, and we'll be announcing that here too. There are so many events, conferences, and webinars happening in our broader movement. VSRF has built a event calendar. Lisa and Janet are putting the links in the chat. Of course, we already had that FLCCC conference, but we have some upcoming events. If you know of any event we don't have on our calendar or something we should please include, if you will write calendar, this isn't, write an email to calendar@vacsafety.org, fill us in, and we'll see about putting it on our calendar. We also have the GCS conference this weekend, October 22nd, the Global COVID Summit's second annual Florida Summit, entitled The Future of Medicine in Post-COVID America, talking about where to go from here. How can we trust hospitals, medical professionals again, and those who punished healthcare workers who advocated for the right treatments. Speakers include Dr. Robert Malone, Dr. Paul Alexander, Dr. Mary Bowden, Dr. Kat Lindley, Pierre Corey, Paul Merrick, Richard Urso, Attorney Jeff Childers, Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Pete Chambers, among many others that you see here on the screen. This event will be live streamed, and we will post that link up on VSRF as well. And to close out, we want to share our VSRF Rumble channel for our videos. Steve's Rumble channel, Defeat the Mandates Rumble channel. I know there's a lot circulating possibly in the chat. All of our replays of our VSRF webinars are on Rumble and Odyssey. For tonight's webinar, you should be able to access it posted to our website, hopefully at some point tomorrow afternoon. We will be posting all the news that's shared this evening onto our website in one update, all of those links in case you missed any. And you can also catch last Thursday night's news there. And we will do this hopefully every Friday, every weekend. We'll put that up there. We have a VSRF College Edition, new program for college students on our Rumble. Rumble every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Tice Pat hosts. He's an Ohio University senior, VSRF team member, and currently in a lawsuit against the mandates. His attorney is Warner Mendenhall. You may remember both were guests of ours. Tomorrow's guest is Phoebe Liu. She'll be talking about fighting her school, University of Connecticut's mandates. We hope you can join us tomorrow on Rumble. Lisa and Janet will put the link in the chat. Yeah,
and Steve? Where can we get that Sounds of Silence video?
Yes. I hope Lisa and Janet, that Sounds of Silence video is awesome. I believe it's on Rumble, not our channel yet, but
yeah, I haven't seen it on our channel yet.
Yeah. We need to throw it up there. But I know it is out there. So, if we could post that link in the chat, if you guys can dig that up somewhere, wait a few minutes, we'll find it for you guys. So give us a minute. And before we go, let's get that billboard up. I think we have that slide. Ah,
okay. Yeah. We are going to, we had to go through, two of the billboard companies we tried to approach to run this billboard said no. We found a third one who accepted this and is going to run it. And I approved it this morning. We're going to run this billboard right outside of CDC headquarters. What do you guys think of that?
And this is strictly for the CDC so that they see it. Obviously, right. We'd like to have a billboard campaign that'll be more for the public. We know not everyone knows what VAERS is, but this is targeted so the CDC can actually see it and know that we're watching. So We will be releasing a press release when it is up in a couple of weeks, as soon as it's up, and we will shoot you guys pictures. I'm sure we'll have it here on BSRL.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And, and once it goes up, I'll email, I've got a list of about 250 people at the CDC who are involved in vaccine safety. They just want to make sure to alert them to check out the billboard. Mm-hmm. So I'll be sending that out as well to just to make sure that we've notified the CDC that their safety signal triggered months ago on death. It probably triggered almost immediately after the shot, but I just happened to see if I never thought the safety signal formula is so bad. I never thought it would trigger. But the thing is that the death signal is so huge that it even overcame the bogus formula, and it was triggered very soon after the vaccines, and nobody noticed. Mm-hmm. I was the first one in the world to have figured that out. And I only did it on a lark because I was just wondering how close it was. And I discovered it had the threshold had been exceeded.
Yeah.
So
thanks, Steve.
Yep.
I look forward to seeing that up.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yes. And next week, we are going to have special guests from our FLCCC conference this last weekend. We are doing a recap show. Dr. Yusuf Salibi, he's an integrative health and functional medicine doctor treating the vaccine injured. He has extensive experience in treating Lyme disease, and epidemiologist Dr. Flavio Cattagiani. We've all seen and loved at the Defeat the Mandates rallies last April. And he's a member of the FLCCC as well. Both Dr. Cattagiani and Dr. Salibi presented at the FLCCC conference. Their lectures are in the digital package that will be available. And we're excited to hear from them. Bring your questions. We'll have two physicians there. So we look forward to seeing you next week. Same place, same time, Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. And as we sign off tonight, we're going to leave you with a clip from the new documentary, The Real Anthony Fauci, based on the book, of course, that we've discussed tonight. It premieres Monday evening at the CHD conference, which that conference is titled The Path Forward, Uniting to Create a Better World in Knoxville. We'll put the link to that conference just so you can find out more about the speakers there. So have a good night. Thank you. And we'll see you soon.
Justice asked the federal trial court in Seattle to fine Gates a record $1 million a day for antitrust violations. Judge Thomas Benfield Jackson ruled that Microsoft had violated the 1890 Sherman Antitrust Act prohibitions outlawing monopolies and cartels.
If you go back and look at Bill Gates' business history as a top executive and founder of Microsoft, it's quite clear that he was very interested in acting as a monopoly.
We've all seen the footage of him testifying as he's rocking back and forth in a chair with his arms crossed in a kind of a rather odd behavior.
The Justice Department has charged Microsoft with engaging in anti-competitive and exclusionary practices designed to maintain its monopoly in personal computer operating systems.
The Microsoft Explorer decision caused Microsoft to divest from what was clearly a monopolistic practice with its browser technology to exclude other competitors.
He was really the most reviled businessman in the United States. And then suddenly, he became the philanthropist.
What he's done is taken his toolkit that he's developed in the pressure cooker of competition in the IT sector and turned those same practices towards public health, and functionally has monopolized public health through his philanthropic giving that isn't really philanthropy. It's more of a screen behind which he has made other strategic investments that have produced a massive financial return.
You've invested $10 billion in vaccinations over the last two decades, and you figured out the return on investment for that. And it kind of stunned me.
There's been over a 20-to-1 return.
Modern billionaires that are also often referred to as philanthropists that are increasingly controversial have a lot in common with John D. Rockefeller's reputation.